Yeah. He's on
turnaround. Hello and welcome to Springboard, your virtual university. My name is Albert Okran, matriculating you into Ghana's foremost personal developmental program running since 2008. This is your most inspirational show and that place where the greatest minds in the world converge. Your virtual university is brought to you by the Springboard Ratio Foundation and proudly sponsored by the Enterprise Group, MTN Pulse, UMB Bank, with media support from the Multimedia Group and the graphic business. So today, by popular request, we launch that big one you've been waiting for quite a while since we announced it. Absolutely special, unprecedented, and if I may add, quite competitive show for our universities. The Dons Conclave, right here on Springboard, your virtual university. So, throughout this month, we'll be featuring five of our finest vice chancellors or heads of tertiary educational institutions, sharing their five key leadership lessons and, very importantly, their five prescriptions for world-class education in Ghana. So let me tell you why you must be very, very interested. If you are a student, alumnus, faculty, staff, friend of any of these selected universities, or if you yourself or your ward is planning to attend, please incline your ears and your eyes to the show and find out the promise, what is happening in your favorite university, and even more, vote, engage, challenge, and discuss the thoughts that will be shared on this platform. And I'll be showing you very shortly how you can be part of this amazing experience. My first guest, naturally, is from my alma mater, the Vice Chancellor, and if I may add, the first female Vice Chancellor of the University of Ghana, Professor Naba Appiah Amfo. Prof, good to see you and congratulations.
Good to see you too. Thank you. It's been a while.
I have been waiting for this conversation since you were last year, as you were here the last time as Pro Vice Chancellor.
Yeah,
if I may add, on behalf
correct.
Of Comfort, myself, and the entire Springboard team, congratulations.
Thank you very much. And I'm glad you chose right to start it right.
I know. I mean, it had to be easy to start.
Yeah, absolutely.
Prof, let's start with the role you play. How hot is your seat as Vice Chancellor?
Well, it's very hot. I mean, as you know, it's the nation's premier university. I must say that it's the eye of the nation. Everyone thinks that they do have a stake at the University of Ghana, rightly or wrongly. So it's can be quite complicated. You have your internal stakeholders to satisfy, the students, the staff, the faculty, parents. You also have other stakeholders, you know, those are parents, the government, literally everybody, you know, everyone in Ghana feels some connection to the University of Ghana. And it's we've grown over the years. Now we have four colleges. We have over 61,000 students. We have learning centers across the regions. We have our local and international partners. We have our industry partners. So it can be quite complicated, but by God's grace, we're doing a pretty good job at that.
I believe so. I mean, I threw my mind back to Legon as it was when we were there in 1987 for our first year with Professor Akila Kwasoya as the Vice Chancellor. And I think that the complications of the multi-dimensional, multi-faceted nature of the university is definitely much more complex, and the issue is more intense than when
Absolutely.
We were there. But before we go into your lessons, how important is this conversation? I mean, I must tell you, since we announced this was coming off, you have no idea how everyone wants to hear their university and everyone wants to hear what you have to say. If this absolutely high levels of interest, how critical is this conversation about education, and for that matter, higher education and world-class education at a time like this?
I think that education is critical in the development of every nation, right? And higher education is at the apex of it. And so definitely from time to time, we need to talk about our education, the system, you know, how we are managing our teaching and learning processes, because these directly feed into the human resource that we are building for our nation. And these are the people who will drive leadership in our nation. When we look at the leadership space, when we look at the people in government, the executive, the legislature, the judiciary, managing big companies in this country. I mean, the majority of these people have been through tertiary education. So it's important that we get these things right if we are going to build a prosperous and a vibrant nation.
I love that. Prosperous and vibrant Ghana. It's beautiful. Prof, let's settle down to the first part of our conversation, because for all our viewers and listeners, they need to know who is Professor Nanaba Apiamfo and what is inside your engine? What are the lessons that undergird your life? What have you discovered on the path to where you are today that young person looking up to you, wanting to be the next first something, can see, okay, this must be a contributing factor that I can learn from. So, if you can take us through 5 helpful lessons or learnings that you've garnered on this journey, we can amplify them for the benefit of our viewers and listeners. And by the way, before Prof starts, this is where you come in. So here's how to support your institution, your favorite institution. If you are a student, alumnus, faculty, friend, staff, prospective attendee, or parent of a prospective attendee, just go to Facebook, on our Facebook pages, Albert N.E. Okran or the Springboard Zone, and simply tell us which of the points your VC is sharing that you think is the most compelling. There's the main video, then there's the snippets or inserts. The one that gets the most engagement, the comments, activity around it, is the winning university. So make sure your university wins. Let's have this conversation big time on social media. Albert N.E. Okran or Springboard Zoom on Facebook. Let's talk. And Multimedia Group and Graphic Business are supporting this conversation big time. So, Prof, what would be the first lesson you would like to drop for the benefit of our viewers and listeners?
Well, my first lesson would be that you should own your personal and professional development.
Whoa.
If you're seeking to be at the top of your profession, if you're seeking to make a mark within your profession, you should learn to build your personal capacity and you should let it be your responsibility. So, for instance, I wanted to be a lecturer and I wanted to rise up to the top, you know, be a professor. So I needed to understand for myself what that entailed, what I needed to do in order to become a professor. If you want to be an accountant, you need to find out for yourself, what does it mean for me to be an accountant? Is it by acquiring a bachelor's and a master's in accounting? Or I have to do some professional programs? Or I have to get a combination of these? And even while I do my professional programs, do I need to get some practical training which would enable me to pass these exams quicker and to also be a good practitioner? So you need to understand that it's not everything that we can teach in the classroom, you know. So you need to make it your personal responsibility, not your teacher's responsibility, not your mentor's responsibility, not your boss's responsibility, but your own personal responsibility. You know, everyone sees the end results, but we often do not see the process. It's only a few who see the process. When the end result is there, we can all see it. Oh, she's the first female vice chancellor. Everybody sees that. But it's only few who have been very close to you who have had the experience of at least appreciating the process that you've been through. So you need to spend time and effort developing yourself, you know. Let me give the example of Jesus Christ. He woke up very early in the morning to pray, you know, to go to a quiet place and pray. So we see that there was a consistent private prayer life, and that resulted in a robust public ministry. Well, he had to commune with his father to get strength from him and to also appreciate the mission that he had assigned to him. So you need to spend time understanding what you require to get to the top of your profession. And you need to invest time in developing yourself beyond, you know, the usual and the obvious.
Spend time developing yourself, because a private prayer life was the key to a robust public ministry for the Lord Jesus Christ. So you say simple, yeah, how much more you? Okay, so that's the first lesson from Professor Nana Abapiamfo, says own your personal and professional development. Don't cede it to your mentor, your teacher, your boss, or your parent. Prof, lesson number two.
Lesson number two is that be unfazed by obstacles, because obstacles are bound to come on your leadership journey or whatever journey that you are on. And you cannot get to the top if you break and back down at the least provocation. I mean, everyone who has been at the top will tell you that they've had their failures. It probably didn't work the first time. As a researcher, I've had papers being rejected by journals, but that did not stop me from pressing on. You know, there have been instances where, you know, people have felt that you shouldn't be in this particular leadership space. You are probably running too fast and too ahead of yourself, you know. People will try in sometimes subtle but sometimes to very obvious ways to dissuade you, to put obstacles in your way. You should not back down. You should be unfazed. If you do not have a resilient spirit, it's going to be tough for you to get right to the top.
Have you ever found out that people who discouraged you, either directly or indirectly, were the same people who turned around to rejoice when you made it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, once you get to the top, you get a lot of friends and associates, you know, and everyone trying to associate with you, you know. But it wasn't everyone who encouraged you. And even sometimes there was the deliberate effort to dissuade you and pull you down.
Is it a case that if people did not mean it, or they realized they were wrong?
Well, maybe they realized they were, I would like to think that they realized they were wrong. But of course, anyone in a leadership position, in a prominent position, you should know that by the mere fact of that position, you attract a lot of people to yourself. Don't assume that all of these are people who really care about you or who really love you. Maybe there's something that they stand to benefit from the position that you are in. So you must be aware of that. Yes, you embrace, you know, everyone, but you must be aware of the fact that it's the position, not you.
There's a relationship between your second point and your first point, actually. The first point is about owning your development. Maybe the second point is about owning your heart or your own resilience in a certain way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because nobody will do it for you.
Yeah.
What would be your third point, Prof. Nanaba?
My third point is that you should look out for talent and nurture such, even on your journey to the top. Because a leader is not necessarily one who is all over the place doing everything, but he or she is the one who is able to identify the strengths of their team members and harness these for the benefit of the organization that they are doing. You know, I'll give you an example. I love to write. You know, I believe that I'm a reasonably good writer, so
that's
I don't
a
have
very huge understatement.
I don't have a problem putting my writings together, you know, speeches and so on. But in the kind of work that I do, there's a lot of writing that is required, a lot of speeches that you have to put together, a lot of reports and all of those. If you don't have team members who are good at that, who would help you to do these, you will not be able to, you know, to catch up with the demand of the job. You know, you need people with different skills on your team that you use to enhance your work. You essentially use to your benefit. And so as you go up, you should be able to identify talents and build them up so that you move up with these people. You cannot simply do it alone. You need a strong team to support you.
I like the way you say, keep a lookout for talent and spot it quickly, because sometimes the talent can be hidden in the team, doing something innocuous or doing the wrong, playing the wrong position or role, mm-hmm. and nobody notices that they are gold material that, if shifted slightly, could bring you value. But what you're saying is that leader must, beyond knowing your team, also be able to spot talent that is being underutilized or not used at all, and channel them towards the effort.
Yeah. Especially, you know, for those of us who work in the public sector, you come and meet a team. You would have to learn to work with the team. You have, of course, I mean, you do have opportunities every now and then to enhance these team, to change roles, you know. But if you're going to change roles for this to be effective, you need to know the strengths and the weaknesses of your team members and ensure that you are channeling the strengths in the right direction while you also help them to overcome their weaknesses.
How do you deal with people who, by virtue of your elevation and your position, you can see how good they can become, and you literally wish you could literally jolt them out of their slumber and push them, but you have the constraints of organizational hierarchy and the bureaucracy. How do you deal with that? I mean, some say it's easier in the private space than the public space. Help us to appreciate. You want somebody to do well. You spot what they can become. You are definite about it. But there's a system you're working with. How do you navigate that one?
Well, yes, you're working within a system. But, you know, helping that person does not necessarily mean that bringing that person onto your immediate team, you know. Within the roles that they are playing, or within, I mean, if you take the University of Ghana, for instance, or any university, there are various departments, there are colleges, there are directorates, various units that we work with. I mean, for example, you know, there was an administrator that was in a particular unit, and I thought that she had strengths which would be better used in a different unit. I had a discussion with the registrar that I think that if we do these, you know, changes and the shifting of rules, it will work better, one, for the organization, and also, two, for the individuals to develop those potentials that they have. Yes, and we did that, and it's working pretty well. So, I mean, there are ways in which you can negotiate some of these things.
I like the smile on your face talking about the negotiation, and even the gestures with your arms. I hope I'm not going ahead of myself, but Prof, in all this, you talked about getting buy-in from the registrar and so on. How critical is stakeholder engagement? If it's not one of your points, I would like to hear your thoughts on it for a minute before you go to your next point.
Yeah, stakeholder engagement is absolutely necessary. I mean, you cannot, I don't think you can succeed as a university leader without adequate stakeholder consultations. You know the universities, you know the professors, they will talk, you know, they would shout out if they think that you are not going in the right direction, you know. And I also believe that even with the younger people, even with our students, you know, they have a wealth of ideas. Sometimes they are over exuberant and they don't channel their energies in the right direction. But you can help them to channel their energies in the right direction. You should provide avenues for listening to them. I mean, last year, for instance, we had the VC's Day with the SRC. And that was a day where I made myself available at the CD Conference Center. The students were there, the auditorium were full, and I was on the spot for the students to ask whatever questions that they want. Oh, it went very well. Explain, you know, some of the programs that we're trying to put in place with them. Not everybody would agree with you, you know, but you allow yourself to be heard, and then you give them the opportunity to also voice out their concerns and their contributions. So stakeholder engagement, it is absolutely critical. At various levels, you need to do that. You need to let the people that you are leading come along with you. Otherwise, you would keep going, and when you look behind, there'll be no one following you.
Wow. Let's do some stakeholder engagement before we continue with our fourth point. If you are listening to us and you are a friend of Legon, a student of Legon, a faculty of Legon, a staff of Legon, a parent of a Legonite, or intending to go to Legon in the near future, please, which of the points that Professor Nana Abapiamfo has shared resonates with you and you think that's the one? She's talked about owning your personal and professional development. She's talked about, in that regard, investing time and effort and not leaving it to your parent, your mentor, or your boss to do that for you. The second point has been about not being unfazed by obstacles. She says, listen, once you want to get to the top, there will be strong obstacles. You need to navigate them, and it's very important. The third one is look out for talent and nurture talent. And in that regard, engage stakeholders. Don't travel the journey alone. Prof, fourth point.
Well, I think the what we just talked about stakeholder engagement neatly, you know, dovetails into this one, which I would say that is value teamwork. Mm. Right.
So I jumped the gun. I knew I was doing it. So I'll put it under the fourth. So value teamwork. I love this. Tell me about it.
Yeah, value teamwork. You need to work harmoniously with everyone, with every member of the team. Yet you need to know your allies. You know, when you come into leadership, there are people who are enthusiastic about you, your ideas, what you bring on board, you know, and are very willing to go all lengths to support you to succeed. Then there'll be those who would be sitting on the fence, you know, let's see how things go. And then there are those, you know, who will sometimes even make the attempt to sabotage you, let me put it that way, you know. There are people who are not eager to see you to succeed, you know. You cannot come and then just start to, you know, put people in different boxes and decide that, you know, I'm going to work with only this set of people. Mm. Not when you are in an organization like I am, work with this set of people, but you not work with that set of people. Open up. Give people the opportunity to prove themselves. That's why I say work harmoniously with everyone, but know your allies, know people that you give them certain critical assignments, certain assignments that when it goes wrong, you know, your whole agenda is derailed. And when you open up, you give people the opportunity, you would even realize, you know, the wealth of talent that you have. I always say that at the University of Ghana, there's a wealth of talent there. And my responsibility as a leader is just to identify these and provide the conducive environment for these talents to flourish. And then I take credit for those.
Beautiful. It's a simple formula. So you're giving us three categories of people that you find on the journey. Those who are your allies, ready to go, happy, excited. Those who want to work and are happy that the thing works. Yes, they are in there. And then those who by and large, are not too excited. You're seeing work with all of them, but know the allies. And when it comes to serious things that are make or break,
exactly.
Put them in the hands of trusted people. Don't gamble. Lovely. And then when it works, you just take the credit.
That's it.
All right, let's go to your fifth point, Professor Nnamdi.
Yes, my fifth point is that you need to understand the authority that you have, but keep your head low. Positions don't last forever. So you use the opportunity that you have now to build relationships that will endure beyond the tenure of your office. When you are positions, you know, people are ready to serve you, open doors for you, you know, carry your bags for you, do all kinds of things for you. But don't let that get too much into your head. As I mentioned earlier on, it's not really about you. It's about your position. It's about your office. And you need to know that you will not be there forever. We've seen that happen in Africa. We have presidents who stayed for years, sometimes even decades, but they eventually did get out of office, you know. And especially when you are in a position like mine, that you know very well that there is a cap on your tenure, you know, or you are the president of this nation, you know that maximum you cannot go beyond 8 years. It's the same.
So what's the cap on your tenure?
It's the same. I mean, it's a 4-year term, and you can do a maximum of 2 terms.
Okay.
Not more than that.
So you
know?
Can actually count the year that you
need. Oh, yes.
All things being equal.
Exactly.
Ultimately.
You come back to the floor.
So you are saying that even though people will be nice to you, they'll do
your
favors and so on, they will carry your bag, want to keep it in mind that you...
It's not you, it is your office, it is your position. But then use that opportunity, you know, to build friendships, to build relations that will last you beyond your tenure of office, because the position opens up, you know, it's a very interesting one. It allows you to network with a whole range of people, you know, from the top to the down. So you need to take advantage of that.
To build relationships.
To build relationships.
What is likely to happen if a person gets so caught up in what they are doing that they don't stop to think that this will end one day? In one word, what is likely to happen to them when they end that tenure?
You know, you get out of office and the next day, you know, nobody... It cares about you.
Yeah.
You know, you may enter an office, you know, for some work to be done, and people, you know, may even just decide to ignore you. Especially if you are one who was throwing your weight all about, you know who I am, the kind of thing. Now you go there, and what do you say? Can you continue to say, do you know who I am? Who cares who you are?
Beautiful. This is Springboard, your virtual university, and today is Legon's Day, University of Ghana. And we are honored to have the Vice Chancellor, Professor Nnamdi Appiah Amfo, somebody I've known for decades, principled, diligent, and a leader in every respect. And it's an absolute honor to welcome her to the virtual university, sharing her 5 life lessons so far. Own your personal and professional development was number 1. 2, be unfazed by obstacles. 3, look out for and nurture talent. 4, value teamwork and stakeholder engagement. And the 5th one, understand the authority you have, but keep your head low because positions don't last forever. The break we are going for will not last forever, but when we come back from the break, let's go to that 2nd one, the big one. What are her ideas for world-class education in Ghana? Please don't go away.
Ah, Joe, won't it? Enterprise Insurance would dear womu promo nana.
Hey, what it? 4 coupons.
Womb.
Washing machine.
Womb.
Car. car wash, vom, baby, vom, obiadie, vom.
Buy or renew your existing motor insurance policy and win instant rewards such as fuel coupons and branded gift items in this year's Odia Wobu Motor Insurance promo. You could also win an iPhone 14, front load washing machine, high pressure car washer, vacuum cleaner, and an auto tie inflator during the monthly raffles, and a slick clutch rocket motorbike at the end of the 6 months promotion. Make you no slack. Call your insurance broker, agent, or visit any Enterprise Insurance branch and get your reward now. You can also call us on 0302-634-777. This promo is in partnership with NLE on the Characters platform.
Terms and conditions apply.
Enterprise, your advantage.
When you can be anything, who will you become?
When you can go anywhere and never feel alone, how far will you go?
When you have the means to make your dreams real, when will you start?
When your voice can reach every ear, who will you inspire?
When your money can travel faster and further than you ever could, where will you send it?
When you can tell a story in every language, which ones will you tell?
When nothing can stop you, and everyone's behind you,
and the whole world awaits you, don't go alone.
Go with us.
Everywhere you go.
Welcome back to Springboard, a virtual university, and to this amazing conversation on our show called The Dawn's Conclave. Springboard is brought to you by the Springboard Ratio Foundation and proudly sponsored by the Enterprise Group, MTN Pulse, UMB Bank, with media support from the Multimedia Group and the Graphic Business, who are backing this amazing series throughout this month. So, Professor Nanaba Apiangfu has been sharing with us her thoughts, her life lessons that include, among others, owning your personal and professional development, being unfazed by obstacles, looking out for a nurturing talent, valuing teamwork and stakeholder engagement, and the fifth one I love very much, almost like the warning to the Roman Caesar, keep your foot on the ground, know the post you hold, but keep your feet firmly on the ground. Which of these points resonates with your own values in life? Let's have the conversation on Facebook, Albert N.E. Okran or Springboard Zone. Tell me which is your favorite on the videos, on the snippets, and also on the post, the slides that have been posted. Prof, let's go to that big one. I tell you what, we've been running a series called My Top 10. And when we get to the ideal Ghana, Everyone talks about education. Everyone seems to have an opinion about education. But let's learn from somebody at the highest level in managing education. Yeah. Prof, if you had a magic wand, if you were ultimately responsible for education in the whole country, which you, to a large extent are in the place that you operate, what would be your five top prescriptions for world-class education in Ghana? Let's start with your number one.
Okay. That my goal as Vice Chancellor will be for the university to train students who are critical thinkers, technologically adept, humane, culturally sensitive, and ready to provide leadership for the country and the continent. Mm. So many of the things that I'm going to say, or many of the points, sort of emanate from this. So my first point as a prescription for world-class education is for us to focus on critical thinking and analytical skills. Students should be encouraged to critically analyze information from a variety of sources. We must direct them to look for information and critically engage with such. Rote learning hasn't helped us. I recently, watched a video where a teacher was in class speaking, and the students just repeating after the teacher. The book is under the table. And they will repeat, the book is under the table. The book is on the table. Then they repeat, the book is on the table. And then the teacher asks, where is the book? And then they responded, where is the book? And it was just a struggle for the teacher to let them know that this is a question that I want you to respond to, because they were just pouting and repeating everything that the teacher said in class. And unfortunately, we do quite a bit of that in our system. We need to shift. And you know, the shift has to start right from the basic level through secondary to the tertiary level.
As a researcher, while these points are self-evident, would you say that your work as a researcher has influenced this point becoming your number one?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, how can you become an effective researcher when you cannot look at data and then identify patterns in there? You cannot, you know, identify outliers. You cannot critically engage with literature and data. That's a very important skill for researchers. And it is not just for researchers, you know. Literally anybody who seeks to be in a leadership or management position, you need to be able to think critically.
I can relate to this as a pastor very, very easily. Mm. I mean, you talked about analyzing data, observing patterns, noticing outliers, and using those to make critical decisions. I mean, take something as mundane as church attendance. Mm. Why do people come for some particular services or in some months or in some days of the month more than others? Mm-hmm. And what are the outliers? Mm. And how do you use that to plan logistics, presentations, messages? Mm-hmm. It is so relatable as you make this point. Mm. And you are saying that rote learning hasn't helped us.
No.
So we must challenge students to do more critical thinking and analysis because ultimately that's what they will need in real life.
That is it.
Prof, point that number two it. On world-class education.
Yeah. My point number two is for us to encourage creativity. We need to create avenues for students to explore their creative sides. You know, music, art, performance. We tend to focus too much on the academic side of things, and very often we are actually testing, you know, how much you can remember, not even apply, how much you can remember. So a world-class education should be utilitarian, you know, it should be utilitarian. It's actually a bad thing for us to even punish students for getting things wrong. You know, remember those days, mental, you know, 1+3, you get it wrong and you are beating up and all of that. It even makes, you know, certain pupils and students hate some subjects, you know, hate to come to school, you know. And for all you know, these people have creative sides that if we provided the environment, we provided them with the needed support, you know, they would excel, you know, once we allow their creative sides to thrive.
Let me share an example that you find very interesting about children with special needs and learning challenges. I was interviewing a musician, Wachiami Kwame, about his earlier days in education, and he was apparently dyslexic, so he could not relate to some subjects. And his father was apparently an accountant, a chief accountant, or something like that. So, how can his son not relate to
one
math? And he says he used his own words. He says he was significantly abused by his teacher with the support of his parents.
Yeah.
He wanted him to do so well. Mm-hmm. And he says the more they beat him, the more he hated education. Until he chanced on someone who tried to convert all his learnings into music, artistic ways. And he says he flourished so well, having previously done poorly in the same exam, because someone could adapt to his way of processing and help him to. I mean, how do we provision for people with learning challenges and learning difficulties who probably are even more adept at the creative side of things?
Yeah, so a number of things. We need to look at the training of our teachers at all levels, right? Because, you know, and especially at the lower levels, the pupils have a lot of confidence in their teachers. I don't know whether you have attempted to correct some wrong that a teacher is, you know, teaching your child. You may come up, you know, against an argument with your child that my teacher says so, you know, and I'm going back to school to face my teacher. How am I going to tell my teacher that, you know, my mom or my dad says that it should be different? So, I mean, teachers play a critical role, you know, in shaping and molding the knowledge systems of our children. And so we need to look at how you're training these teachers. We need to look at the way that we teach in class to get it to be more interactive, you know. And that also has to do with resources. Because, you know, the smaller your class, the more interactive you can make it to become. If you have large classes, there's a limit to the interaction that you can allow to happen in class, right? And we need to also, in our ways of assessing, we shouldn't just assess based on memory. You know, we should have a range of it. Yes, memory is part of it, but we should also provide the kinds of assessment that allows for our students to apply, you know, that allows for our students to exhibit their analytical skills, right? And then we need to invest. We essentially need to invest a lot more in education. We need to make it appealing for people. Look, I know people, and I'm sure you also do, know people who would love to teach, but they think that it's non-lucrative, you know, to teach. And so they would rather do something else. Even their parents will encourage them to do something else. Look, I can tell you a story of a mate of mine at Legon. And when she was in her final year, the mom, who was a flourishing trader at Mokolo, asked her, so now we are about to finish school, what are you going to do? And she said, I would love to go into teaching. I love to teach. She said, the mom said, thank you, you know, for letting my money go waste. You know, imagine. And we need to get our brightest and our best in teaching, like happens in Finland, right? And we need to also provide the conducive environment. If you have smaller classes, then you can pay more attention to students who have special needs, right? At the University of Ghana, for instance, one of the things we're doing to enhance our student experience is to equip our assistive technology lab so that our students with a visual impairment, they are not left behind in our technological drive, in our drive to use more technology in our teaching and learning. So all of these things cost money, and we need to plan for that and put in our resources.
Put your money where your heart is. Exactly. And so far, we're talking about critical thinking and analytical skills, and then two, creativity. What would be your third?
My third is for us to encourage lifelong learning. When I came in, we were talking about, you know, comfort and rolling in the program, you know. And I must say that learning should not be confined to the classroom, nor to the period of one studentship. Albert, I'm sure that a lot of skills that you are using now and a lot of knowledge that you are using now, you probably didn't learn this when you were in the classroom. How many years ago? Some decades, more than, you know, two decades ago. And I'm making reference to the first degree, yes. But if you decided to stop learning the day you left school, I would say that was the day that you became, you know, intellectually dead.
The day you stop learning, you become intellectually dead and irrelevant to your society. Very tough, but very real. So that's your point number three. What would be your number four, Prof?
Yeah, my number four is make use of technology. And anybody who has followed me since I became Vice Chancellor know that there are two concepts driving, you know, my leadership is technology and humanism. So we are in a technologically age. We are in a technological age. And so for me, irrespective of discipline, our graduates should be technologically adept, right? we need to incorporate technology in our teaching and learning, and in small and big ways. You know, for instance, I mean, since I became dean, I will not accept a letter from a student which is handwritten. No way.
That's the basic.
Go and type it, you know. Who receives a handwritten letter in this day? That's a base, very basic, you know. You force when you do so. So, for instance, you know, you insist that your students should type the assignments. That's a very basic. It will force them to engage.
That allow students to actually type their exams on computers?
Oh, yes. I mean, so, for instance, we have a learning management system that we are using, and you can take the test on the computers, you know, and there are various options for you to do that. And in fact, we are promoting that. In last year, April, I launched the Vice Chancellor's program to enhance the UG student experience.
Wow.
And technology is central to that. And so we are seeking
What does the program do?
Oh, they very quickly, there are three components. You know, there's a classroom modernization, which we are equipping our classrooms, putting in the needed projectors, interactive boards, even making it possible so that you can, if you had to travel for a conference as a lecturer, you can be there, you know, and deliver your lecture. You can have students outside of the lectures for some of the classrooms. You cannot do it for every classroom.
Okay.
They would be out of the classroom, but they could tune in. It's a way of also managing our numbers without a brick and mortar solution. So classroom modernization. The second one quickly is the one student, one laptop, where we seek to use innovative ways to provide our students with laptop.
When I'm ending this show, I'm going to ask you, if somebody wanted to support the Vice Chancellor's initiative, what should they do? Who should they call? But that will be when we are ending. So three components: classroom modernization, one student, one laptop.
The third one is a hotspot comfort zones. Albert, when we were in Legon, you know, everywhere was close to everywhere. There were only five halls close to the teaching areas. But now we have expanded. We even have non-resident students. Students come to campus, and in between the lectures, they don't have comfortable places to stay at. So we want to create these comfort zones. They are hotspot enabled, so you can go there in between your lectures to relax. You can finish up an assignment. You can do your quick reading before going to your next lesson.
The smile on your face to talk about these things is infectious. But let me ask you, will there be a day when, having provided students with one student, one laptop, students can actually write their exams with laptops instead of, as part of a technology drive, instead of writing with pen and paper?
Oh, yes. And it's happening now. It's happening now in some instances. The only thing is that we need to upscale these, get proctoring software so that students, you know, proctoring software allows for remote invigilation, you know. I wish we wouldn't have to do that, but
that
to safeguard the integrity of our exams. So, yes, that is going on. Exactly. I was going to go to that.
You can reference anything.
Exactly. We can have an open book exam, and it's more difficult than,
Charlie, I'm coming back to Bingo. I'm telling you. Okay, last one. The fifth and last one.
Yes, so the fifth and last one is that we should cultivate global perspectives grounded in local context. We cultivate global perspectives grounded in local context.
Explain.
We need to make our students understand the connectedness of today's world while appreciating the uniqueness of our specific environment. So if I can give an example, the use of technology in healthcare delivery, right? So the advanced countries who are seeking to use technology to enhance the healthcare delivery, to even, you know, do diagnosis and so on. That's a brilliant idea, you know, and there are applications that are allowing them to do that. Now, if you want to, and that's something that we also need to think about, but if you're going to bring something like that into our context, you need to appreciate the nature of the population that we have, you know, the literacy levels that we have, the access to sophisticated phones and so on that we have. And then you have to tailor make the solution to our context. And you need to also understand our priorities. Maybe for us, you know, sitting in front of the doctor and having that chat alone, you know, is like 50% of your of your sickness gone.
You are sick and you're gone already.
So if you're going to provide a totally faceless system, is that going to work in our context? To what extent can we, you know, use all of these technological innovations? You need to appreciate your context. We need to encourage our societies to be efficient in whatever we do, but we don't need to discount, you know, the cultural and societal specificities.
You know what? Our time is up, but I just would like to ask you, which of your achievements in the past few months as VC gives you the most fulfillment?
What gives me the most fulfillment as providing the technological devices for our students. Look, I can tell you the story of the student who was one of our very first recipients. In fact, this person sent an email to my office. He said he didn't even think that we were going to respond, you know, let alone to provide that need. And he is forever indebted. When we did our first disbursement of the laptop for the needy students, the students who, some of the students who received the emails, they said they thought it was a scam. And you know, so generally providing that environment that enhances our student experience. Because you know what? I believe that a committed alum starts with a satisfied student.
I believe so too. Let me ask you about the VC's program. If somebody wanted to support it, what should they do?
Yeah, if they go to our website, you know, you look for University of Ghana, you go to our website, there is a tab which allows you, when you click on it, support the VC's initiatives or something like that. When you click on it, you would have the needed, the information that you need to support us. But the office that is coordinating all of these is the Office of the Pro Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs. So you can also reach out to that office and you will get that information.
Before we go, in just a minute, you talked about the two portals, the two pillars that drive your work as VC, being technology and the second one being humanism.
That's right.
Take a minute before we go to tell us humanism, what exactly?
Yes, so we need to, you know, sometimes when we are embroiled in all that we do, we tend to forget that the center or the core of all that we do is the human being, is the student, right? University education, and education for that matter, is for the public good, is to ensure that the life of that person accessing education is improved. And then it affects the person's relations and the person's community. So as we set out our policies, as we set out our plans, I always want my staff and faculty to keep the student at the center of it. Mm. You know, to keep the human being at the center of it, not just the student, but also the staff and faculty. What can we do to ensure that students are comfortable? What can we do to ensure that our staff are comfortable and they will do the things that they have to do without compulsion?
Prof, before you sign off with a message to the public about why Legon and nowhere else, let me remind our listeners and viewers about the points you've shared. You talked about own your personal and professional development. The second one was be unfazed by obstacles. The third one is look out for and nurture talent. The fourth is about value teamwork and stakeholder engagement. And the fifth one is keep your feet on the ground. I like that part. Just know your authority, but keep your feet on the ground. And on your prescriptions for world-class education, Number one, you said critical thinking and analytical skills. Number two, you said creativity for students to also explore their creative sides. Number three is to encourage lifelong learning, like the virtual university. Number four is make use of technology. And the fifth one is cultivate global perspectives grounded in the local context. For you watching out there, which one is your favorite? Let's have this debate on Facebook, Albert N.E. Okran, and on Springboard Zone, both on Facebook. Let's debate these perspectives, contribute, comment, and let's see Legon rise to the top through these engagements. Prof, for the benefit of everyone watching out there, tell them why Legon. In a minute, why Legon?
Well, for the past 75 years, the University of Ghana has been engaged in training top quality human resource for the nation, the continent, and indeed the world. We've also been engaged in cutting edge research, which has contributed to the advancement and the development, not just of our nation, but also of the continent. These are things that we do best, and we do that in a holistic environment where we try to nurture not just the intellectual potential of our students, but also their creative and sporting potential. University of Ghana is the place to go, nowhere else. We are in our 75th year and we've gotten finer and better, and that is where you have to come to.
Whoa, that's a powerful sales pitch. I tell you what, the sporting bit can come in there. Your sporting facilities are getting better and better by the day. We can't wait to come and see when it's completed, the new stadium, the ultramodern stadium. Professor Na Abafianfo, University of Ghana Vice Chancellor, thanks for spending time with us on the very first edition of our brand new series on the Dons Conclave. It's a bringing together the minds of heads of tertiary institutions, and definitely we'll continue this debate on social media about the thoughts you've shared. And I like the humanism and the fact that one financially challenged student can receive a laptop and see, I thought it was a scam, and use that to enhance their learning, knowing that one day ultimately he can actually write his exams on his laptop. It's a new season. I want to say a big thank you to you for coming.
Thank you. Actually, I had an alum today, just before I came here, you know, bringing us two laptops, and he said he read a testimony on Facebook about a student who received this, and the student said he is definitely going to give back.
So if you are an alumnus, please get those laptops and send them to the University of Ghana to support this program, and definitely come forward and I will play our part in supporting the Vice Chancellor's program. So we come away again next week. My name is Albert Okran, thanking you on behalf of the Springboard Roadshow Foundation and our sponsors, the Enterprise Group, MTN Pulse, UMB Bank, our media partners, the Multimedia Group, and the Graphic Business. On Tuesday, find this full story with Professor Na Abafianfo on page 18 of the Graphic Business. And let's continue the conversation. Which is your favorite of the points she shared? Albert N.E. Okran and Springboard Zone on Facebook. So we do this again next week. My name is Albert Okran, saying God bless you, God bless you, and God bless you.
So long, we've been here, we've been trying to break free, chains that hurt us in our minds, but no more, this is a turning point,
no more searching.
Come on, turn around.
No more delays. Time to move on.
Time to move on.
He's always turned around.
Where we are, where we going? Wrong decisions.
Change, turn around.